When personal data met politics, met targeted advertising on social media, did that actually change election outcomes?
There is no evidence that the type of targeting that Cambridge Analytica was suggesting they were able to do was at all effective.
Well, that's a relief. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood. All week on Marketplace Tech, we've been focusing on the data economy and how trading our personal information for free services seemed to get so out of control. The event that kicked off this conversation, of course, was the revelation that a political data analytics firm harvested up to 87 million Facebook profiles in an effort to target ads to potential voters. In fact, politics has been involved with social media for quite a long time, but it turns out politicians have been experts at gathering data about us for even longer. Here's Sunshine Hillegas, professor of political science and public policy at Duke.
Microtargeting is not something that's new. I mean, that really goes back to the late 1990s. And a lot of that microtargeting was offline. You saw a lot of personalized policy messages on divisive web wedge issues being used in direct mail. And it has been with Facebook that you have connected offline and online identities. And so, you know, now what campaigns can do is give a list of people that they have identified within the voter files and you know, using consumer data, they've you know, identified the subset of gun owners in, you know, Pennsylvania who appear to care about a certain given issues. And because so many people are using Facebook, they can submit that list of names, these offline identities, to Facebook and target them online.
So it sounds to me like you're saying it really was Facebook. I mean, was Google enabling any of that targeting or anyone else? Or was it really pretty specific to this one company?
Facebook is quite unique just in terms of the scope of use and the fact that, you know, on Facebook, in contrast to something like Twitter, right, you use your real name. That makes it typically possible to, you know, kind of match those offline and online identities in a way that makes for more sophisticated targeting.
Well, and I think we should point out here that we're not only talking about advertising, that some of this data collection could be used to set up fake groups or start to sort of push propaganda campaigns. And I wonder how much political campaigns going forward are still going to think to themselves, we're going to need all the data we can get.
Well, there's no doubt, right? Nobody's going to turn away and not use data. And I think that's one of the things that is important to think about, like where we go from here. When I started looking at online advertising in the 2012 election, you know, watching what Obama was doing in his advertising, there was kind of still this general sense that online, that what you could do is you could go to websites where a bunch of really politically sophisticated people hung out, and you use your advertising to try and turn them into more active supporters. So, you know, you would include a donate button, you would include a get involved button. By 2016, that had shifted, right, where you could reach a wider swath of including persuadable voters, in part because you had more information available about, you know, where people were going. So what happens next, right, is the question is where do we go from here? And certainly one of the things that we also saw in 2016 is the loopholes that were available in terms of campaign spending made it possible for groups to hide their identity and get involved in a campaign. So I think we need to, looking forward, kind of really keep open and think through how this means of communication might be used, you know, by different interests and how it could be gamed for people's, you know, financial benefits or political benefit.
Is there any evidence or has there been any evidence that these campaigns around influence and persuasion actually work, that anybody has been persuaded to change a vote or not vote?
There is no evidence that I have seen in terms of the scientific research that the type of targeting that Cambridge Analytica was suggesting they were able to do was at all effective in actually persuading people. It is interesting, however, to think about native advertising, and that's advertising that is intended to look like content rather than the display ads on the side of a website. You know, we've really become accustomed to being able to ignore those advertisements on the side. But if you're scrolling through your Twitter feed and, you know, you see a tweet that's interesting and there's just a, you know, a very small font underneath that says promoted, that it might be the case that that type of advertising is going to become more common and could be more effective.
I mean, I definitely hear you saying that it's possible that political campaigns, that their efforts at messaging could start to just look more like information or interest groups. And in that case, let's say we get a bunch of regulation around ads online and the way that they work. Would that even be effective?
We are talking a lot about campaigns, but in 2016, the advertising that was being done by the campaigns was just absolutely, you know, blown away by the spending by outside groups. So outside groups were spending $1.4 billion and the campaigns were, you know, spending in the millions. That has received some attention in terms of the groups from Russia that were doing purchasing of online ads. But even within the United States, because there are these hidden, essentially groups that are able to hide their intent, are able to send political messages, that's where we should, you know, be concerned and be paying more attention.
You know, does knowing what you know, just down to the personal, does knowing what you know, how does it make you think about your own feeds during an election?
Well, one of the things that I am particularly interested in is what I don't see. Facebook has announced an initiative, I hope that it still moves forward, that they will be making available all of the ads, the political ads, that are shown on Facebook in one spot. And I think that's just a tremendous resource, because one of the implications of micro-targeting is that we are only seeing things that are intended for us, right? And thought to be of interest to us.
Sunshine Hillegas is a professor of political science and public policy at Duke. I wrote a whole lot more about the data economy. You can read all of it on our website, marketplace.org. Stephanie Hughes produces Marketplace Tech. Eve Tro is our senior producer. Shaheen Anpour is our intern. Dan Powell engineers the show. I'm Molly Wood. This is APM. Here's an investment opportunity with a guaranteed return. When you donate to support Marketplace today, your gift will be matched dollar for dollar by our friends at the Candida Fund. Listeners like you who give to Marketplace do more than just help keep the show on the air. You actually help us grow and get better. It is a way to directly support independent reporting and journalism you can trust, and to make it possible for us to tell the stories of modern life through our digital economy. Don't miss out on this chance to make your donation go twice as far. Give today at marketplace.org, and thanks.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.